Emma, and I'm listening from the UK. We all want our children to lead fulfilled lives, but we're surrounded by conflicting information and clickbait headlines that leave us wondering what to do as parents. The Your Parenting Mojo podcast distills scientific research on parenting and child development into tools parents can actually use every day in their real lives with their real children. If you'd like to be notified when new episodes are released and get a free infographic on the 13 reasons your child isn't listening to you and what to do about each one, just head on over to yourparentingmojo.com/subscribe. And pretty soon, you're going to get tired of hearing my voice read this intro. So come and record one yourself at yourparentingmojo.com/record the intro.
Hello and welcome to the Your Parenting Mojo podcast. And we are here in Vancouver at Iris's house. Thanks so much for having us. You have welcomed us into your home, into your family, and it's really lovely to be here with you. We're here for the Parenting Beyond Power book tour. Yay. You were absolutely instrumental in organizing the Culture Talks event, which was so much fun. And before we came here, you and I were on a coaching call a couple months ago. And I recounted a story about how my dad and Karis were in the grocery store together. And I was across the entire produce section from him. And she was, I think, 3 at the time and was kind of kneeling up in the grocery store cart. And he said to her, "Sit down," in such a loud tone of voice that I was shocked. And I looked over and you could see that she was really shocked too. And she just kind of sat. And in that moment, I kind of thought, okay, yeah, we're not doing that. And so I recounted the story on the call and you said that you had been thinking about the way that patriarchy shows up in your life as well. And I said, oh, I've been thinking about recording an episode on that topic. Yeah. And so so I think that conversation sparked something for you, right? Where did that go for you?
So I was like, oh, yes, because I started thinking about how I do that. If Malaya doesn't, like, go to bed, and I would just repeat myself and in a louder voice and a more menacing voice, like, go to bed. And then, like, you know, so I started like, oh, this is not very comfortable. And and yet when those instances happen, that's my go-to. So yeah, and that just sort of started my reflection of what are the things that I do that I wouldn't really want, but then I do it anyway.
So we had this conversation on the coaching call, and that sort of sparked this train of thought for you. And we decided that there was enough there that you said, let's talk about this when you're in Vancouver. And I said, let's talk about this. So can you start out maybe by just letting us know a little bit about you, who you are in the world, where you come from, so that we can kind of be grounded together?
Yeah, so Iris, and I'm originally from the Philippines, and I came here to Canada as a landed immigrant in 2005 and got married, met my now husband here. And for many years, we tried conceiving. And finally, as if it's the final. But so right now I have an 8-year-old daughter. So I'm mostly a stay-at-home mom. And I do a lot of unpaid work, which means that I do volunteer work, community work, and supporting other people. But I don't get, like, money from it. So yeah. And there's no salary either in housework, as many of us know. So that, I think that would be... And I've been in your parenting group and learning group for several years now.
Yeah, okay. And so when I think of you, there are two things I primarily think of.
Yeah.
One of which is your silliness.
Yes.
I think you may be the silliest person I know.
Oh, that's an honor.
I know. I knew you would take it that way.
Yeah.
And the other is your empathy. Can you tell us what that's like for you?
I would say the main things that are different now, there's more sturdiness in our home. We have 3 kids, so it's still hard a lot of the time. But my partner and I understand more of the why behind this parenting work that we're doing, and we understand what our values are. So that's grounding for us. And we also see each of us sort of having a roadmap to use to navigate, you know, life and trickiness. And the roadmap is really feelings and connection to our bodies and needs. And so it's really, it's collaborative. It's still slow, and we're still gaining these skills together, but it's really hopeful for my partner and I, especially, who didn't have this as kids. And it's brought a lot of connection with our kids, which of course brings joy and honestly ease in some ways too, because if we're working really hard but not actually meeting needs, then it's it's not going to land, and there'll still be this tension. So actually getting to the feelings and needs has been brought a lot of ease, in addition to the peace and connection.
My empathy is a gift, and also I don't want to think of it as a curse, but I used to think of it as a curse. But I feel deeply about other people, and I have several experiences in my life that I can draw from and connect with other people. And why it's not so much of a gift is because I carry all this emotional burden with me, and I think about, oh, what happened? Like, for example, in the membership, especially the Taming Your Triggers workshop, I go like, oh, what has happened to this mom, and like, you know, and I'm just trying to be like, okay, this is not my burden to carry. Mm-hmm. And I show compassion, I try to do what I can, but this person is capable of, you know, navigating her own challenges, mm-hmm. or something. But it's hard, like it's an everyday thing, mm-hmm. for me.
Okay. And so we're here to talk about patriarchy.
Yes.
And I know that there are ways that this showed up in your family of origin, yeah. with each of your parents. And mm-hmm. obviously you're an immigrant into Canada. Mm-hmm. And you were telling me, we were chatting beforehand, and you said that you had explained some of these stories to folks who, yeah. identify as white, who have always lived, mm-hmm. in this area, and that they saw a lot of commonalities in their lives as well. So mm-hmm. can you tell us, how did this show up for your mom maybe first, and your dad?
Yeah, so there's this story of, I don't really remember this happening, but because my mother has repeated it many, many times, it has become part of my memory.
Yeah.
And she said something about, like, when I was a toddler, she trained me, so that's the word, she trained me to bring my father's slippers, house slippers, to the door when he comes home from work. And she was so happy about that, and I get it, like, you know, you are raising a good girl, mm-hmm. and so that was the thing. And then, but I thought of it like, oh, okay, I was a good girl, and my mother was training me to be this good woman and all those things. But then I realized when Malaya was also a toddler, she wakes up and then she goes, oh, mama, let's play, and I would say, oh, have you said good morning to daddy? Mm. And then so that kept on going, that went on. And I thought, this sounds familiar. Like, why is this familiar? And then I realized, this is my mother training my child to, you know, please the man of the family, and to be good, and, you know, and... Because sometimes Malaya wasn't interested in saying good morning to her dad. And so I just started to look at my own parenting in that lens, mm-hmm. I guess. And, you know, trying to also understand myself, like, hey, it's not that I'm bad. It's good that I'm aware of this, and mm-hmm. I shouldn't blame myself, but I'm more aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that was the kind of like, aha moment for me.
Yeah. And I'm almost wondering if your mom missed an opportunity. You could have had slippers in one hand and a martini in the other.
Yeah. Or beer.
To take it to the next level.
Yeah.
Were there other ways that you saw this showing up for your mom when you were younger?
Yeah. So So my family, so I grew up in the 80s, late 70s, 80s in the Philippines. And I think, oh, not I think, the expectation is that the husband goes, the dad goes out to, is the breadwinner, and the mom stays home and does the house chores. But it was different for my family. It was my mother who worked as a dressmaker and my father staying home as the house husband and doing laundry, washing dishes, cooking, and fetching water. We didn't have indoor plumbing, so we fetch water from the village well or something.
That sounds like woman's work.
Yes. Yeah. So my father did the woman's work. My mother did the man's work, quote unquote. And yet my mother, she wanted the traditional role. And so she was kind of resentful, like, why does she have to be the one working for all of us? And I understand her. Like, when she comes home from work, my father would say, we don't have anything for dinner. And then she goes to the wet market to get fish on credit. We have this paper thing. And because my father doesn't want to go out, he's ashamed to get things on credit. And so my mother has this expression wherein she says, I'm the one playing the music and I'm the one dancing. So, and I totally get that. But then also my father would do the housework. But then, you know, because it's not the expected, it's not the stereotype, both of them were so unhappy about it. Yeah. And like, oh, you should do this and you should do that. And yet, even if my mother was the breadwinner, if there were some decisions that my father did not approve of, he would get mad. Mm. So it was confusing for me because I started feeling ashamed of my father because, you know, all the dads went to work and mine didn't. So, and just being poor as well. And so it was confusing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you think it really affected your dad's sense of who he was as a person, as a man?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think of this as my father, because he was doing women's work, he was devalued and he lost his dignity. And that's double whammo because women's work is not valued and he's a man doing a woman's work. And so it's even more like, you know, devalued. And also he's not, unlike my other neighbors, like we have the macho culture and they'd be like, drinking in the corner store but he doesn't do those things. And so he's so different. He did not belong anywhere. And yet he wasn't as good as the other housewives when it comes to, say, laundry. So my mother's relatives would be snickering about our white uniform because it's not as white as it should be. Because my father did not bleach it in the sun and all those things. And so, yeah, I just think now and look back and how my father was just devalued every day and trying to assert his value, but then also, and yet he's not getting that. He doesn't get the respect from his children.
Yeah.
He did not get the respect from his children. Yeah,
I'm also wondering about the emotional climate of your family. Was it okay to express emotions? Were you rewarded or punished for expressing emotions by either of your parents?
Yeah. So emotion is like you hold it, and then it like it just erupts like a volcano, and then it says, "Oh, it's your fault." Like, I was just being patient and you push me. And now I'm like, you know, overflowing with this anger. And it's because you did it. Like you know, and we were walking on eggshells because my father was silly. That's where I got my silliness from. But then he has these moments where he also just erupts and we didn't know, like, what was that?
Which were we going to get?
Yeah.
Is it the silliness that we can go along with, or is it the explosion?
The anger, yeah. Yeah.
That's really tough.
Yeah.
That uncertainty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I noticed that with me too, with Malaya. I let her, okay, do this. Okay, you can have more additional screen time. And then it's been 2 hours. Give me that. I told you it's earlier. I give you more than what we agreed on. And now you don't give it to me. Give it to me. So I'm like that Lord of the Rings voice. So, yeah. And also understanding my mother in that role. I think I shared with you this story that when she was in her late teens, she worked as a nanny for a widower, took care of his children. And then she got pregnant by her boss, that widower. And so she got pregnant out of wedlock in her, I don't know, 17. The age always changes, but late teens. Mm-hmm. And my uncle, her older brother, was so angry. And there was a family meeting, and my uncle said, Fanny, Rufina, that's my mother, Rufina, we should send her away to another island because she brought shame to our family, and let's consider her dead. Just like erased, right? And so he was adamant that, you know, that did not happen, fortunately. But I don't know if it's like irony or poetic justice. I don't know what the word is. But a year after or something, my uncle, that uncle who was so mad at my
mother. Same person.
The same brother got a woman pregnant out of wedlock. And there was nothing. Mm. There was no like, consider him dead, bring him to another island. No, there was nothing. And that double standard, it just makes me angry. And I know that my older brother and that other cousin of mine, they're very close in age. Mm. So, you know, like, how dare you say this to my mother, who's a woman, and just erased him, and you did the same thing to another woman.
Yeah.
So my mother's strategy in life has been to, you know, not to rock the boat, keep your head down, try to be a peacemaker and appeal to the emotion. And, you know, and I used to be really mad at her, like, why don't you just do this and do that? And not knowing how hard it was for her, it was survival.
Yep.
Because that same brother sent her to the city for the dressmaking class, which was her livelihood and fed all of us. So, you know, it's tricky.
Yeah, and I'm just, I mean, that story just, it's so heartbreaking, but it's still happening today, right? Mm-hmm. Men are still policing women's bodies today.
I'm
thinking about, you know, the overturning of Roe v. Wade in the States and how it's always the woman's fault and the pregnancy is the woman's thing to deal with. Mm-hmm. And I forget the author of the book. There's a book called Ejaculate Responsibly. And it's like there are often two people involved in this thing, and one of them has no responsibility, and the other one bears all of the responsibility. So this is still happening today.
And so
as we start to, you know, we see you growing up and trying to make sense of all of this, you're becoming a teenager, a young woman, and moving to how old were you when you moved to Canada?
Oh, I was in my early 30s.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how did some of this, did you think about this stuff when you were sort of in those teenage through early adulthood, mid-adulthood years?
Yeah. So in second year, I had my first boyfriend, and he will remain a name.
And you can give a pseudonym if you like.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things that, so it was a secret because you're not supposed to have to get into a relationship in the Filipino culture growing up until you finish school. And that means you're working already, which is, you know. And so one of the things was that the mother of that young man was Of course, they suspected, but we never said, you know, we never admitted to it. And then, so one of the things she said to him was that, number one, I was asthmatic. So it's kind of a negative. Like, why would you get a partner who's sickly?
He's not perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. And another, that I'm not good in housework.
Okay, I'm looking around at your place. The first thing I thought when I walked in here was, it is so clean in here. Oh. It's not the tidiest, I'll give you that.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It is clean in here.
Yeah. But, well, I have to thank somebody who helps us clean.
Yeah.
But we do our best. But
yeah.
But that's the thing, and I was very sassy, and I won't say this in front of my boyfriend's mother, but I would say, oh, you need somebody to cook and blah, 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 blah for your son. Why don't you get a housekeeper? You don't need a wife for that. And of course, I didn't say, I was just saying this to my boyfriend,
right,
and
yeah.
That, you know.
Because why didn't you say it to his mom?
Because it will be disrespectful.
Yes.
Because she's the elder.
Yes.
So in front of her, I was like, oh, hello, like that, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and so it was around this time that the relationship got wonky, understandably. And I told myself, I will not marry a Filipino. But I also have to admit, I'm not very popular with Filipinos because I speak my mind and, like, mm-hmm. again, I'm not good in housework. The in-laws will say, like, no, she is not a good choice. And
right.
But somehow, I had this idea that if I marry a non-Filipino or somebody who did not grow up in the Philippines, that they will be someone who will share in the housework and maybe in the abroad. So abroad, like US, Canada, Scandinavia. And so of course, I was so naive to be thinking this. And also, there was this one experience which really was it was very significant to me. Our house was kind of a hub for people from other provinces or from the countryside. And there was one time that there was a woman who came in, a cousin of a cousin, like I don't remember anymore. And she arrived at our house. She had her hair bald. Crew cut or something very short.
Yeah.
And that is very uncommon in mm-hmm. the Philippines. And so I asked her and she said she had typhoid fever and mm-hmm. her hair fell out. But my other cousin said that her husband cut her hair because he saw her talking to another man. And I was just, and of course I have neighbors who, you know, there's domestic violence, but that woman, the act of somebody else, like a man cutting a woman's hair, I did not have word for patriarchy or domestic
yeah.
violence, but I just felt like something is wrong there. Like,
right.
I was just like, something is very wrong. And now she, and at that time she was at our place, she was trying to, like, you know, cool down everything until her husband comes down or forgives her or whatever. Like, but I cannot forget her hair.
Yeah. And actually, that's reminding me of when you cut your hair.
Yes. Yeah.
Why did you cut your hair? I you told me at the time and I'm not remembering right now.
Yeah. It was partly that experience.
Mm.
It was me saying, I'm cutting my own hair short,
mm-hmm.
even if it's not expected. No one will cut my hair. Well, of course, there was a hairstylist who did it, a hair cutter.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it's taking back that act of, like, first of all, like beauty.
Yeah.
What is beauty? What is what is feminine beauty? It's
mm-hmm.
not always long hair.
Mm-hmm.
And that experience, just a little bit of context with cutting hair. Fathers also threaten their teenage daughters
mm-hmm.
that if they still go on with their secret boyfriends or whatever,
yeah.
that their hair will be cut short.
Yeah, it's like a visible shaming, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so to me, that was just like, no, you know what? No, I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. No one will do it. So it was just me. I did not do anything like performance art or anything.
From what I remember, your daughter thought it was performance art, didn't she?
Yes.
She had a pretty strong reaction to it, didn't she?
Yes, because her concept of feminine beauty is long hair. And she was just like, are you still the same mother that I have? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's still me. And until now, she's saying, like, don't do that again. And maybe I'll still do it. Now I need permission from my own daughter. Oh, my goodness.
Things are changing.
What's happening?
Okay, so we skipped ahead a little bit, right? So you had this boyfriend that didn't work out ultimately. Yeah. You got married in your 30s, which is relatively late.
Yes, yes, right? Because I was in my mid-20s. I was called an old maid in our village.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so then you came to Canada.
Yes.
And you met your husband. Mm-hmm. Line dancing, I found out last time we were here.
Yes, Scottish country dance. Yeah.
And so you got married. And so were there kind of inklings of anything percolating in your mind before you had Malaya? Because for me, I didn't notice any of this stuff until after Karis was born.
Right.
We seemed like equals until that point. So I'm wondering, did you see anything before that point? Or was it only after Malaya was born that you started to notice these things?
What I noticed was myself asking Richard, what would you like for dinner? And even if I want something else, then I would like sort of adjust. And even the bedtime, like I'm more of a morning, a day person, and he's more like, and I adjust myself for so that we will be in rhythm, unless we, otherwise we will be like passing ships, right? But I think it was really when Malaya was born that things just like was clear.
Okay. How, what was clear?
Also to mention that Richard is retired, so he has this, you know, he stays home, but there is more pressure on me from myself. Like I perceive Richard that he expects me to still do a lot of the housework.
I think one of the skills I've learned that's been the most impactful is practicing embodiment and practicing noticing my feelings, identifying them, and noticing where I feel them in my body. And so I do this for myself and try to do this for my kids too. And I've really see it. I've seen this transform the way that I respond to their conflict or, hard, big feelings that are coming up for my kids. I used to see those as something I had to solve and fix for them. And it was exhausting. It didn't work. And kind of left us all feeling disconnected, I think. So I guess what this looks like more is a lot more pausing and a lot more allowing of feelings and naming feelings and locating feelings in bodies. And I have time and time again now seen how those feelings move through our bodies and how the validation of actually feeling them really transforms the state from dysregulated to more regulated, which is really helpful.
And he does it, but it's not in the time timeline that I'm thinking. So I'll do it. And one other thing is I'm not bringing in income, like money. And I feel like, oh, I have to do this because I will make myself worthy of being here, of existing. And my contribution is doing all these things in the house and with the children, with Malaya.
So how does that show up in terms of how you expect your husband to do things? Like, what's there?
So for me, being a man, I have this expectation that, you know, you are, even if there's a storm around you, you stay grounded and you are very like, okay, let's do this, let's do that. But in our relationship, it's me who's like that because I love logistics and planning and like, this one.
You excel at logistics and planning, I have to say.
And I just love it. And Richard just prefers to be like, doing his own thing and not to be directed and all those things. And he gets overwhelmed. He, of course, also being a neurodivergent person, he gets overwhelmed with when there are so many things going on. Mm-hmm. And to me, I'm just like, why can't you just, you know, why can't you do this? And why can't you understand this? And then there was a time when I went all like kamikaze, or, you know, I was nagging him like, you should have done this, you should have done that. And then we went to bed. I thought there was nothing because he did not reply to me. But in the middle of the night, he woke up and I came back from the washroom and he just said, next time, Iris, you marry a neurotypical. And I just saw, I just felt the hurt mm-hmm. of me like expecting him to be somebody else mm-hmm. that, you know, he's not what I expect a manly man should be. And how he is hurt by, you know, not just being a neurodivergent, but, you know, the class thing and how he feels he does not belong. And
in what way?
Because he's not, he's white, but he's not the typical white person with loud voice and like a lawyer tall, like, you know, and mm-hmm. and some of his siblings are, and just like being different. Mm-hmm. That you don't tick the box of a masculine man.
Right.
And so, like, if you're not a masculine man, but you're a man, so, you know. And I feel that. And I've felt the anger in him, especially in the beginning of our relationship. Like, you know, being ostracized, being left out, not belonging. Like, he feels like he does not belong. Mm-hmm. And this is his country. Well, this is my country now, but he was born and he was raised here. And just not feeling you belong, it's in the place where you grew up, just, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think a lot of that comes from we have such a narrow idea of what you have to do, right? Mm-hmm. To be a man, of how you can look, how you can present yourself, how you can sound. Mm-hmm. And that if you don't fit with that, then... I mean, if you identify as a man, then you're kind of becoming more womanly, right?
Yes.
If you're not big enough and tall enough and loud enough, and then and of course in a patriarchal culture, there's nothing worse really than being a woman.
Yes.
So it's sort of looked down on, right? And of course, the same goes for women and the policing of women's bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
That if you look a certain way, then you are womanly, and if you don't look that way, you're not womanly. Mm-hmm. If you do the housework and
don't
rock the boat, and
what kind of woman are you? You don't know how to do this, or you don't know how to do that. And I remember my parents telling me growing up that if I don't learn this work, or if I don't shut my mouth, if I'm very mouthy, that my husband will return me. I was like, oh, if you don't behave in a certain way, I think your husband will return you to us, like return to the like back to sender.
You know, you're not the first person I've heard that from, actually. Yeah, I was doing a workshop in Colorado and
not Filipino.
A Mexican American immigrant said the same threats were made in their family. And so it seems like you fit within this role and you do these things or you'll get sent back again.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, it's sort of the ultimate, you don't belong, right?
Yes. Yeah.
and we're going to send you back.
Yeah. And just remembering too, when Richard said to my mother that we wanted to get married, my mother was so relieved. Mm-hmm. She was like, oh, like that. And it's like, at last, my daughter is sold. Like, you know, it's like, she got on the train. She's not left by the train. And like all those things. And like what, like women should have a man or should have good married. And then after that, oh, why don't you have children? Yeah. And so all these expectations, you know?
Yeah, I definitely felt that as well. And it's almost like, it's expected. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's so expected. It's like there's no other choice.
Yeah.
It's not that nobody told you there's no choice. It's just that what else is there?
Yeah.
There's the shame and humiliation of being a single woman.
Yeah.
In your 30s, 40s, 50s, mm-hmm. an old maid. Or you can bypass that shame and marry somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you should have children.
Yes.
Because
next.
Yeah.
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 And yeah, I think about, I'm not sure if I'm saying her name correctly, Zaun Villiens is I think how it's spelled. And she writes a lot on Facebook and has written about how, about that exact thing. Uh-huh. And what if we were to tell our girls now, and even our boys, that there are other mm-hmm. choices that you don't have to assume, right? Because this is socialized into our kids.
Yes,
all the skipping games they play in school, all the teasing of each other of who fancies who, mm-hmm. all setting us up for this is what's next. Mm-hmm. Get ready for it. And what if we talked with our kids now about there could be another option. You don't have to do this. This mm-hmm. is one of a number of options.
Yeah, and that option thing that you don't have to choose right away. You can just test it. And Malaya has told me that she wants to be an artist and a model and, you know, like musician, whatever, performer. And she was so, at one point she was like, oh, what should I be, Mama? Like, and I said, well, you don't have to decide now. You can just test it and you can be all those things. Mm-hmm. It's fine, like, you know, and the same with having a boyfriend. Mm-hmm. I always, some will ask, oh, so do you have a boy, just teasing her? And I will say, or girlfriend.
Yes. Or transgender friend.
Yeah, yeah.
Non-binary friend.
Non-binary right? friend, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. And why are we teasing 8-year-olds about having a boyfriend or a girlfriend, right? Yeah. That's just part of that socialization.
Yeah.
So I'm curious about how this shows up in your parenting now when you're interacting with Malaya, when obviously you're trying to interrupt that narrative a little bit that, mm-hmm. that she's getting from other people mm-hmm. About the sort of cishet normative path. Are there, what other ways do you see patriarchy showing up sort of as a force to be reckoned with and that you're working to dismantle it?
I know that working on my problem-solving skills is part of me teaching Malaya that, like, you know, you have a voice, that it's not just me who's older than you, who is your parent, who knows about, like, you know, mother knows best. That's, like, you know, the person knows best what we are expert of our own selves. And creating that space for her to say, this is not working for me. What can we do? And she comes up with really great ideas. And for me to accept it and for me to be not thinking like, oh, when I was a child, I would have been slapped for saying that or for doing that. And, you know, this is different. This is a different way of parenting. And yet, I also recognize that I have a lot of hurt from the past. And sometimes I feel like, it's so unfair. You know, before I was not allowed to do this. And now she's allowed, I let her do that. And she's not grateful or she's not, you know, all those things and all those baggage that I carry with me. So I'm learning to just set down this heavy baggage, emotional baggage, and just see Malaya for who she is and for who she wants to be, rather than me trying to define her or, you know, telling her this is what you should do or that's what you should do.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's what this work is all about, right? Because what you wanted, what I wanted when we were little was to be seen as who we really mm-hmm. were. Mm-hmm. And instead of that, we got, you know, put the parts of ourselves that are too big, mm-hmm. put them in a box, ignore them, pretend they're not there anymore, and only present to the world this sanitized yes. version of ourselves, the mm-hmm. version that cleans mm-hmm. and doesn't talk back and mm-hmm. doesn't have ideas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so what you're doing is you're saying, yes, I would have been punished for speaking in that way, but that doesn't make it inherently bad.
Yes.
and I can learn to heal myself so that I can hear that from her and hear, Mama, this is not working for me, and work to find a way that actually works for both of you. I mean, to me, that heading in that direction is patriarchy dismantling, patriarchy healing work.
Mm-hmm. And just, yeah, that's really true. And also accepting her observation, because sometimes she can be so spot on, it hurts.
In what way?
I may have shared this in the group. One time I was answering emails or something, and she was on her iPad, and she said, Mama, I'm hungry. I was like, okay, let me finish this one more paragraph. And of course, the paragraph was very long. And like, Mama, I'm hungry. And she must have said several times. And then Richard comes here to the kitchen door and said, oh, it's dinner time. And I stood up right away. And they're like, oh, okay. You know, I'm not finishing the paragraph. And, like, you know, and then later on, just like a few minutes after, she was still in her iPad. And she said, Mama, why is it that if I ask for food, you let me wait, but if it's daddy, you gave him food right away, or you got going? And I was like, spot on.
Yeah, and the things that they observe, because they don't have all the decades of cultural conditioning that we have, they see it for how it really is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we can learn from that. I think there's so much we can learn from children. That instead of us thinking that our role is we have to teach children to be in a certain way, that we can learn from them how we're showing up and whether that's aligned with our values, right?
Yeah.
Because that's kind of not aligned with your values.
No. And so I've made the conscious decision that I won't be a lawyer for both Richard and Malaya. Because I'm like the negotiator. Like, Malaya will tell me, oh, when daddy tells me this thing, so for example, she hurt her finger. And then Richard would say, like, oh, when I was a boy, Malaya, I had this injury and I did not cry and all these things. And she was telling me that she did not feel it was helpful. And, you know, and so I asked her, what do you think would be helpful? And, oh, daddy should just say, okay, let's get the Band-Aid and things like that. Richard does that, but he is, when I was, like, you know, compares himself to him. And the same with Richard. Richard would complain to Malaya how difficult Malaya was. And I'm kind of like the between. And I will say to Malaya, before I would be like, oh, you should understand daddy because he's this, he's that, it's his experience. But now I've just like, ask her what would be helpful to you. And not to sort of rationalize why her dad did that or said that. And the same with Richard. I will explain that, you know, Malaya has a need that she wants to be heard. She needed like connection, for example, or something. And she was acting that way. And sometimes when the three of us are here, they talk to me and like, oh, but daddy said it. Oh, but mine. I would say in my Filipino accent, oh, yeah, that two of you talk to each other. I'm not a lawyer. You're not paying me. Huh? You talk to each other. And then they would go silent.
Well, I think that's a really important point, because I think that women often think, well, patriarchy is a man's thing, right? Patriarchy is about men being in charge.
Yeah.
And a point that I often make in workshops is that we are not neutral parties in this. We can be conduits of patriarchy. And I'm thinking about an example that we talked about before, right before we started recording, where I was just a few days ago in a parking lot, and Karis and I were sitting in the car outside waiting for my husband to be in a store. And in the car next to us, there's a family getting in. And I hear the mother say to the toddler, you better get in that car seat or daddy's going to get really angry. And so we're not neutral parties in this. We are conduits for it, right? The power flows down through us. And I do work with some parents who say, but my mom was the one that was in charge. And so, how does that fit within a patriarchal culture? And I guess my response to that is that, you know, any culture where there is this power dynamic, this power over is... And it's sort of inherently patriarchal culture. And even if that power is flowing down primarily through the woman.
Right.
And so because if it was a feminist culture, it would be a shared dynamic, mm-hmm. which is what we're working towards. Mm-hmm. So I guess, you know, a lot of people listening to this are going to be female identifying mm-hmm. and are going to be thinking, well, yeah, patriarchy sucks and it's all about the man's mm-hmm. role and the man's got to change what mm-hmm. he does. But I really see that what we do is important too.
Yeah.
And that we need to recognize our role in perpetuating this and right in propping up the system, in protecting the man at the top of the family mm-hmm. from any sort of emotional discomfort, pain, and sort of using our power over our children, mm-hmm. which itself is also a patriarchal dynamic.
Yes. Yeah. And I do that too. Like that woman, like, oh, watch when once you're, I do that. Like, especially if I don't want to deal with a thing, it's like, oh, you wait for that. He will say what, like, you know, and, but then I also feel like that's not a good example for my daughter. Like, why do you always have to wait for this man to say something? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and I don't want her to be that just waiting for the boss or waiting for this to give the stamp of approval. So, yeah. And so what I often would suggest is like, okay, let's talk. Every time I say we will have a family meeting, like, Malaya gets like, oh, I don't want... because she's afraid or what the consequence is on her. But I just want everybody to be heard mm-hmm. and not just this, the power is just in this one person. Yeah. It's like a white male or even if he wasn't white or mm-hmm. something. But
So where are you now, right? Where are you with this? What's your leading edge of practice? Is it in caring for yourself? Is it in your relationship with Richard? Is it your relationship with Malaya? What's really present and alive for you at the moment?
Yeah, it's really resting when I feel I need a rest and that I'm worthy of rest and that I don't have to do all the dishes and to do all the housework that
you're doing so well. I see dishes on the counter.
Yeah. I had to work hard. that I'm worthy of resting. Mm-hmm. And one interesting thing is that Richard told me just a few months ago that he thinks that it's easy for me to rest.
The parenting membership will be open for enrollment between May 5th and 15th. We have sliding scale pricing and a 100% money back guarantee. Learn more at yourparentingmojo.com/parenting membership.
Because I'll just say, okay, I'll take a nap. I usually say I listen to my meditation, which and then segue to napping mm-hmm. because it makes me feel relaxed. And he said to me that, oh, you find it so easy to rest. And I said, oh, excuse me. No, I have to really talk myself into it. And I realized that he has this pressure too, like of, oh, I have to do this, to fix that, to fix this. And my list is really long. And, you know, like he himself has that pressure of achieving, being productive and all those things. And I just laugh because like he thinks I'm good in resting and I think he's good in resting and like, let's just chill.
Yeah. Yay for capitalism, right? You have value if you're producing.
Yeah. And you are like nothing if you haven't achieved something for the day.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah.
Yeah. So rest is mm-hmm. the core for you and, mm-hmm. and noticing where this shows up with Malaya.
Yes. And that dynamic of like, okay, let's ask your dad mm-hmm. and waiting, like the world stops because we will wait for dad mm-hmm. to say his opinion. So, or his, give his approval. Mm. So, yeah.
Is there anything else you'd like to share as we wrap up?
I have this hope, vision that our children, our daughters will be comfortable in speaking up mm-hmm. and being understanding and also like asserting like, hey, I need this, I need to rest or whatever, like I need to do this, I want to do this and I will adjust, but you won't, you men or their partners will not be the in an altar or something. So that's my hope. And I guess that's my hope. And also there's a lot of work for me to do for that to happen.
Yeah. Yes. Because she's not going to get to 18 and suddenly realize that for herself.
Yeah.
She's either going to practice that with you or she's going to learn the same things that we learned.
Yeah. Yeah.
where the man is sort of at the top of the food chain. And, mm-hmm. and you know, I want to be clear that the patriarchy hurts men too.
Yes.
Right? This is not sort of a male bashing thing. It hurts men differently, I think, and mm-hmm. maybe not to the same extent, but it hurts men as well. So, mm-hmm. So I think that ideally what we are moving towards is allowing all of us, you and me and our children, to be able to live our whole expression. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, we both happen to be raising children who identify as girls right now. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of knowing yourself and being able to have your own ideas is forefront. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, if we were parents of boys, mm-hmm. then allowing them the ability to fully express their feelings.
Yeah.
And be in deep relationships with somebody else mm-hmm. would be something that I would be definitely very focused on.
Mm-hmm. So Yeah,
it's really profound work. Mm-hmm. It really is.
Yeah,
thanks for being willing to go on camera and share the depths of your marriage and your parenting mm-hmm. with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I, at the back of my mind, I'm just thinking, oh, my relatives will see this. Anyway, I think my gift to the world is my story. So
yeah.
I'm letting it go and look, you know, whatever comment. They will just have to say it to me and I will respond.
And they're too far away to shave your head, by and large, I think.
Yes, I will shave my head first before they do it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
So great
thanks
to be
so
with you.
Yeah.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I enjoyed being with Iris. Between the time when we recorded that chat and today, I developed the idea of offering three things that you can try if you want to put the ideas from the episode into practice. I started out calling them mild, medium, and spicy. And when I was in touch with Carrie Cavers for the Moms Against Racism episode, she kind of called me in on that naming, and she said it wasn't sitting well with her. She said that foods that are spicy come from racialized cultures, and because whiteness is centered, these dishes are often referred to in an othering way or discussed with language that implies they're abnormal. And she went on to say that she wasn't sure about associating spiciness with the hardest or the most challenging or uncomfortable actions to take. Of course, my intent was not to harm with this labeling, but my white privilege means I'd never had to consider that until now. And I kind of assume if you've made it this far into the episode, you've heard us say the word patriarchy this often, you're probably also going to be okay with hearing about white privilege. So I really appreciated that calling in from Carrie. I took her point. I'm in the process of changing the naming to the curious learning and growth stages. You'll still hear it referred to as mild, medium, and spicy in old episodes, and even in some new episodes that are conversations that were recorded before she and I had that chat. And it shows up in some workshops too, which we have to approach very systematically to make sure that we catch all of the mentions and we don't confuse people. But just know that that change is coming. So to go on to our curious practice for this episode, I would suggest the first thing to start doing is noticing patriarchal ideas when they show up in the media that we're consuming with our children. So I actually have an example right here, which you'll be able to see if you're watching this on YouTube. It's a book that Karis and I reread recently. We haven't looked at in quite a while, called Yesterday I Had the Blues. And it links colors with feelings and the main character's experiences in his family, although the boy himself isn't named. And I bought this book because it's important to us that we read books featuring racially diverse characters. And I particularly appreciated this one because it shows a black family just living their lives and not explicitly dealing with or trying to teach white readers about racism. But when we reread it, I noticed quite a lot of things that I hadn't seen before. The main character's dad has got the grays because he got a parking ticket, and the boy knows he'd better not ask for a new skateboard today. Dad is in the role of being a provider and the family money manager. Mom is barely mentioned, except to say that she got the reds, which now I realize kind of plays into the angry black woman stereotype, and the kids run away from her when it happens. The boy's sister Sasha, kind of predictably, likes dancing, because Sasha got the pinks. She likes butterfly hair clips and things that make the boy want to hop on the next bus. So this is very clearly communicating that pink is a girl's color and boys should distance themselves from anything associated with femininity as far and as fast as possible. This is how these kinds of ideas are transmitted to our children. And I don't want to pick on this book because I don't think it's necessarily worse than any other book. It's just one that I happen to have reread recently that I thought would make an example to share. So the curious step is just to start noticing some of these things. And then the learning step is to start having a conversation about them with our children. And you're actually doubly lucky on that one because I have an example to share with you. So parents in the parenting membership have been asking me for a module on how to talk with children about big topics like white supremacy and patriarchy and capitalism. So I've been recording bits of conversations that I have with Karis on these topics. And as luck would have it, I recorded my conversation with her about this book. She did give me permission for me to record it and to share it, although she does tend to feel a bit embarrassed when I'm recording, so she doesn't say as much as she would if we were just chatting between the two of us. She also speaks in her silly voice, so you'll hear me translate what she says several times. What you're about to hear is not very different from what I just explained to you, but many parents tell me they don't know how to have these conversations with their children, so I'm hoping that this recording will help you a little bit with that.
Okay, so we just read, what is the book called? Yesterday I Had the Blues, right? And you noticed the pinks immediately, yeah? Mm-hmm. Did you notice anything else about what the book was talking about?
The first thing that the boy had was a blue.
Mm-hmm.
Blue.
Okay, and who is blue? What color is blue associated with?
Boys,
yeah. Okay, and what's the mom's role in the family? To do what with the children? Take care of the children? Yeah, get them to do what they're told, right? And how does she do that? Right, by getting angry. Yeah. And daddy's role is what? Driving around, paying for things, right? Daddy's the breadwinner. Daddy's the one who makes the money. So this book, I appreciate this book because there are black characters in it who are not talking about race, right? They're not educating us about race. They aren't coping with racism. They're just living their lives, which I think is really cool. And then at the same time, they're also reinforcing gender norms, right? They're, remember the what happened to the boy when he saw the pinks, when he saw his sister doing the pinks? Right. Right. I want to catch the next bus. So it's saying that anything to do with girls and femininity and pinkness is bad, and boys should get away from that as fast as they can. So it's really hard to find books that fully reflect our values, right? Because even when we want to read books by black authors talking about black people and just enjoying their lives and having fun, then we come up with other ideas that maybe don't fit with our values. Yeah. Tired, huh?
Nobody got the purples.
No, they didn't, did they? Is there anything else you wanted to?
Or the oranges.
No. I mean, yes. Grandma had the yellows, didn't she?
But not the oranges.
Yeah, the yellows were similar to the oranges. Okay.
I don't censor the books that Karis reads, and I don't plan to start now, but we will definitely keep talking about these ideas as they come up. There are obviously a lot more than three steps that you can take on this topic, but the one growth idea I'll leave you with for now is to start noticing the ways that patriarchy shows up in your relationship with your child, and maybe even with your spouse. If you're a woman in a relationship with a man, do you try to get your children to squash their big feelings so as not to inconvenience your partner? Do you use daddy's power and authority to gain their compliance by telling them they don't want to see how angry he will be when he finds out what they've done? Do you make yourself smaller and minimize your needs and take up less space in the relationship with your children and your partner so as not to inconvenience anyone, but perhaps particularly your partner? You could start by noticing these things, and maybe a future growth step could be to deliberately start practices that heal whatever you're seeing show up. If you're not a woman in a relationship with a man, then what you notice and your practices will most likely be different. But patriarchy kind of has a habit of showing up in a lot of places, so I would be surprised if it wasn't in your relationship with your partner, especially in your relationship with your children, because it's a system of domination that you most likely learned from your own parents. If you're a dad listening to this who has a female partner, then start by looking out for times when your partner hushes the children when you're around. Look for times when you use a loud voice or threats to get them to do what you want them to do. Look for your partner not expressing a preference for what she wants to do or deferring to your preference. These would all be signs, some of a vast majority, many more signs that patriarchal power is here in your relationship. And a really big part of healing from that is making sure that everyone in the family has a chance to be heard. So I hope that gives you just a few ideas to get you started in your own practice or to build on your existing ideas as we all work to heal for all of our benefit.
Hi, I'm Emma, and I'm listening from the UK. We know you have a lot of choices about where you get information about parenting, and we're honoured that you've chosen us as we move toward a world in which everyone's lives and contributions are valued. If you'd like to help keep the show ad-free, please do consider making a donation on the episode page that Jen just mentioned. Thanks again for listening to this episode of the Your Parenting Mojo podcast.